What is happening? Welcome back. Yogi Roth here, the Life Without Limits podcast. Thank you for subscribing, rating, reviewing, sharing, and most importantly, coaching me up on things you want improved, guests you would be excited to hear from, questions you want to get answered, etc. This has been a muse that continues to light me up and spark incredible joy in my life. Today's guest also sparks incredible joy, not only in my life, but in the lives of millions, as she is seen and heard by millions every single week on the Pac-12 Network. It is one of the main faces on the network, Ashley Adamson. Her path is phenomenal, number one. She's taken the long and competitive journey to the Pac-12 Network, from small market to mid-market to now massive market. And her understanding of storytelling along the way is something we dive into, and it's awesome. She's got this epic responsibility that you can just hear in her voice to the craft of storytelling. So much so now that not only is she on TV, you know, multiple times per week on the Pac-12 Network, but she also teaches a class in San Francisco at a local university around the art of storytelling. I've been lucky to be in those classes, observing, been a part of a couple of them, and her mastery is unique. And I think, well, it shouldn't come as a surprise when you have to go down the path that you're about to hear about. When you're in those small markets, shooting your own stuff, cutting your own stuff, editing your own stuff, you have to see story from so many different lenses, and you have to really love that. And all too often, right, you don't want to carry the camera bag, or you don't want to do some of the grunt work, but she's always done that stuff with a smile. For me, she's got a work ethic that I admire, that I look to for constant inspiration. And I think for you, as you listen to her conversation, you'll find out why storytelling is so important in her life. And to me, it comes down to the idea of the word responsibility. She understands that it's her responsibility to share a student athlete's story accurately and authentically. She understands that it's her responsibility as a face in the media to master her voice with incredible authenticity and, of course, great understanding of what she wants to say, how she wants to say it. And then the third element, she's got a great mastery of making people be their very best. And I think coaches, they always get credited for that, of tapping into the potential of their athletes and making sure that they get to the maximum of that. She does that on set. You know, whoever you are, whatever sport you're covering, you go onto a set with Ashley, you're doing a talk back with Ashley, you're going to get your best performance because she's going to draw that out of you because of her skill set. So I think if you're an aspiring journalist, storyteller, you're in the profession, you need a refresh, or you're just somebody who just wants to get lit up by somebody else's path and the way that they've achieved success, I think you're going to love this. Ashley continues to just impress everybody. She's about to enter the next phase of her life, which she will share with you in this conversation. A conversation I've been waiting to have for a long time. Fired up to have her on the Life Without Limits podcast. I'm getting out of the way. Here comes Ashley Adamson. Ashley, I've been looking forward to this. You've been on the slate. You've been on the whiteboard. And finally, we do this.
I'm excited to be here. I will tell you that I was starting to get my feelings a little bit hurt. Like Mike Yam got, you know, primo. Like, what was it, like 2 months ago?
It was training camp. Yeah.
Training camp. So I'm glad that you asked. I was very relieved when you asked because I've been looking forward to coming on this podcast. I love this podcast. It's great. You've had some awesome guests. I love that it's sports, it's life, it's storytelling, it's all the stuff that I love. So
it
I'm
does.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate that. And feel free to rate, subscribe, and review. So Mike Yam always says
do.
On his
yeah.
podcast. Okay. So a couple rules on this podcast, if you've heard, is that one, I only ask questions I don't know the answers to. Which is hard.
I was going to say, which I think is going to be hard because I feel like you know me fairly well. So
right.
I'm looking forward to these questions.
Okay, cool. So I did a lot of work on these. I'm kind of excited, a little nervous. First and foremost, I like to set the stage. I think the listeners enjoy everyone's perspective on the first time they met. And I'd love to know yours, and then I'm going to tell you mine, and we'll see if they mesh at all.
Yeah, so I remember it very, very well. You and I were both hired to come onto the Pac-12 Network before we launched. And the very first thing that I ever did for Pac-12 was come up to L.A. for football media days. And it was before I technically started for Pac-12. Like, I think I started August 1st, and those were, you know, the second week in July or something. So I was a little bit nervous and felt like, you know, I mean, I've told you this before. Like, I certainly was not ready for this job when I took it. And I was nervous, and I remember I had... There was an announcement that went out about who the talent was that had been hired by the network. And, you know, it was like Rick Neuheisel and you know, a whole slew of people, Ronnie Lott, and you were on that list. And I remember I looked you up and I thought, oh, this guy looks cool. Like, he looks like he likes to travel. He likes storytelling. Like, cool. All right. Yogi's going to be a friend. I can tell. And I remember we met at, what bar was it? It was the talent, like, happy hour for Pac-12. And so I walked in and I remember thinking, I remember the whole night, because that was such a special, unique time. And I felt like there was so much going on. And I remember we started talking, and I think you showed up a little bit later. And we got into like a really long conversation, maybe an hour or two, it seemed like. And you were telling me this story of, I think you had just gotten back. Or maybe it was a little before. You had just gotten back from the Congo.
I did. Yeah, that was aggressive.
And you almost didn't make it back from what I said. I just remember so specifically you like telling me the story, and you were kind of going on about, well, I don't want to ruin that story if your listeners haven't heard it. If you have never told it on this podcast, you should.
We don't talk about that.
Okay, we don't talk about that story. Well, I remember thinking like, who is this guy? Because, and this is no knock to all of the other football analysts that I love and work with and are my dear friends, but you don't come off like, you know, your typical football analyst, which I'm saying that as a compliment. Like there was something, you know, else there that was really intriguing to me. And I remember being so engaged, and all of a sudden I realized, I was like, we've been talking for like an hour and a half. Like I should probably go talk to somebody else, some other coworkers here, so that I don't feel so rude. But I remember like from that, I just remember it so well. Like that very first meeting, I thought, you know, you had an unbelievable energy, and you were a guy who was as excited about this opportunity at the Pac-12 as I was. And it was cool. I just remember being like, we're going to be friends. This is going to be good.
I remember that night too. That was amazing, because I came back from that trip and I hadn't talked to anybody. And you're so easy to talk to, as you see on TV all the time, that it was just like, okay, I'm just going to talk now. And it just came out. But I will say this. So I have a very similar memory of meeting you. But the memory that stuck out to me the most was when the first time that I was literally got to work beside you and watch you operate. And I don't know if you remember this, but this was first year Pac-12 championship game at Arizona State. Stanford travels there, and we're kind of working, and we're just figuring it out. Like, we don't know what we're doing necessarily.
Not much has changed.
But I remember watching you prepare for one of your hits. Like, basically, games end, there's a recap, and you did it. And I was watching you from afar, and you're writing down these notes, and I was so amazed that you were so committed to the craft. Like, I think as a – I just never saw that before. And I've worked around, like, some fun people in this business, but I was so impressed with your, like – not even commitment, but like your sheer joy and love in the craft. And it was that night, I remember, because I flew in early that morning. I flew in from Texas. It was kind of beat, and you had so much fun. And then I remember watching you do that final hit, and I was like, wow, this is the standard, and you have to raise your game. And I kind of enjoyed that of watching somebody operate. So on that note, we get that out of the way. I really want to know, the first question I have for you is, what drives you to show up every day? And whether it's show up at work, show up in life, because I think we both agree that you aren't a different person at the office than you are with your friends. Like, okay, professionally, you've different tasks that you have to accomplish, but you're the same personality. And I feel like you always show up with this positivity, this beauty about you, about your spirit, about your soul, and this whole podcast is about what makes us human. So I'm curious how you show up and why you think you show up all the time.
Well, first of all, I appreciate that. I'll take that as a compliment. And I do think that there's something that Brad Stevens, the former Butler basketball coach, once said. He's now a coach of the Celtics, of course. I'm a huge fan of his, and I've said that many times. But when I lived in Indianapolis, I got to cover his team. And I asked him one time about one of his former players, Ron Norred, who is one of those guys, and you've met a lot of them, that there's something about them that people just gravitate to, and he's a natural leader and just someone that you want to be around. And I was trying to get him to explain, like, how would you explain Ron to someone that you've never met before? And he said, when Ron Norred walks into a room, the energy is immediately lifted. I don't care if there's one other person in the room or if there's 500 people in the room. The energy, the light goes on when Ron walks in. And he said, and that's a testament to who he is and what he brings and the passion that he has for everything that he does. And I remember thinking as I left that interview, I was like, I want to be that. Like, that's such a cool way to think about, you know, going through life that way. Like, I want to be someone that when I walk in, I want to make you feel, I want you to be happy that I'm here. Because I'm happy that you're here and I'm pumped to be here. I have the best job of anyone that I have ever known. Honestly, I love my job and I have, I've just been blessed all the way around. Like if I can't be happy, what, you know, like who I have no right. I hope, and this sounds cheesy and maybe a little bit trite, but I have been given so much in terms of what I've been able to do professionally and the life that I have at home and with my family, that I hope that everyone gets to experience the way that I feel right now in my life. And I don't know, you know, things happen and everything can change in the blink of an eye, but I do. I feel like right now I'm in an amazing, amazing place. And why would I be anything other than, you know, lit up every single time I walk into a room or see somebody or go into something like that. And that's not to say that I don't have bad days or that I don't feel, you know, the frustrations of work or, you know, whatever it may be. But I just think that idea of like, be a light to others and have that be something that when you walk into the room that, there's a connection there. There's a light that goes on. And when I just remember when Brad Stevens said that, it was something that kind of stuck in my mind is like, that's cool. Like I hope to be that because, there's a lot of other stuff out there that drags us all down. So
how old were you when that happened, that conversation?
Was probably in, I lived in Indianapolis from 2010 to 2000. Let's see, actually maybe like 2000. Oh gosh, I don't even know. That was probably like 2010, 2011.
Okay.
Yeah, it was when they were making their runs to the national championship, those two straight years when it was just awesome to be a Butler Bulldog fan.
And Ashley's path is amazing as a broadcaster. You've kind of gone down that lonely road, and you can listen about that on the Mikey M. Give Me a Sense podcast. Yeah. We'll cross-promote that. But I'm curious. So 6 years ago-ish, what were you like before that when you walked into a room, if you had to look back at yourself?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a great question. I don't know that I was that different. You know how sometimes when people say something and all of a sudden it puts something in perspective and it allows you to like understand. I don't think that it was like that comment changed who I was organically and that all of a sudden I became this different person that was trying to be bubbly and passionate about life and all that. I think I've been that way, you know, sort of who I am my whole life. I think that put it into words in a way that it hadn't before for me. But I do think the biggest difference between myself back when I first got into the business and myself now is that I had work was my whole life. And I, you know, worked in Albany and Syracuse and Indy were the three markets that I started out in local news. And my entire life was my job. And so, you know, when you're not making much money, when you're living in a city that you would never pick to live in, that you don't know anybody, and you're trying to figure out, you're trying to memorize all the mascots for all the Syracuse high schools, which I did eventually before I left. But when you're doing all that stuff, you just throw yourself in the job. And so what happens is, and I think this happens with a lot of people in life, like when your job is the majority of your world, when you have a bad day at work or when something goes wrong at the office, it affects your life in a really big way. And the difference, I think, now is that I have so much more of a balance, and that's a credit to Pac-12 and kind of what they've been able to do for me and for their employees. I think the way that the work-life balance here is really amazing. And I have a home life that I'm really, really happy about. I'm around family. I'm married now. I have a baby on the way. Like, there's so many things that I have outside of work that when you have a bad day at work or something doesn't go right, it's okay because you have that balance. And I didn't used to have that balance. I was so hyper-focused on getting to the next job and getting to the next thing that I used to be really worried that I would, you know, was too caught up in my own ambition, if that makes sense. Like, I always sort of worried that I was never going to feel like, okay, not that I arrived or that I made it, but that, like, are you ever going to be happy where you are? Because I was constantly looking to what the next thing was. And I really do, again, not to sound cheesy, but I found that here. And I do feel happy here. And I feel really fulfilled in all the areas of my life. And it's amazing because it's thinking back on some of the anxieties that I used to have and the stuff that I used to worry about and stress out about. It's again, when it's your whole world and it's not going well, it's, you know, those days can be a lot worse.
So there's a lot of aspiring Ashley Adamsons that listen to this podcast. I wonder if the anxiety Do you think that's like a rite of passage? Do you think that there's another way to do it? I mean, because you threw your heart into a craft that now, you know, you're young, you know, like you achieved success at a young age. Okay, maybe you didn't come out of college and go right to SportsCenter, right to Pac-12.
I was no Mike Yam, but
right.
Yeah.
But you clearly, you know, you've taken, you're kind of like a young head coach, right? You were a position coach, you're a coordinator, and then boom, you get this really cool opportunity out west. Curious if you think that's part of the road, and it's almost like, does that, I don't want to say misery because you weren't miserable, but does that like pseudo misery come with the craft?
There were certainly miserable moments. I can very much say that there were plenty of tears that were cried in some of those smaller TV markets. And again, I loved my time there. And I would say that somebody asked me the other day, like, would you do it all again if you knew what you know now? And I would like to say yes, because I can't imagine doing anything other than what I'm doing right now. And I love it so much. But if I'm being totally honest, I don't know. Right. I really don't know if I can go back and do it again. It was a grind. And there are things that happened that were like, you know, you're just like, this is unfair and this isn't right. And there were so many things that I just would get, you know, caught up in emotionally, because you're putting yourself on the line. You don't really know what you're doing. You know, you're still young. And even though I'd gone to grad school and sort of knew in theory what being a sports broadcaster was, but you really have no freaking clue what it takes and what it actually entails and what it means to be good and how you prepare. So I think that I am so grateful to my former self that I did go through the fire. And I think that it has really helped me, kind of the perspective that I was just giving you and that I have now on my life. I don't think I would have that if I hadn't been through, you know, some of the rigmarole of local news. And I say this all the time. Bob Schmelzy is one of our producers, and he used to produce local news. And I say, like, people who've worked in local news, it's like you're a kindred spirit, because you kind of know something that, like, not everyone who hasn't worked in local news understands. And there's something about kind of being with, and you're with a lot of younger people. I mean, some of my very, very best, closest friends I met in some of the small markets that I worked in, and you're kind of all working your way up and trying to figure it out. But you're working really late nights. You're working really early mornings. I remember I used to gauge how crazy my weeks were by the toothbrush test. So if I got up in the morning, like maybe I had I had to come in and do the morning show. If my toothbrush was still wet from the night before, I knew that I didn't get enough sleep. That was like how I knew. So there were a lot of lean cuisines at, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning on a very, very little sleep back in those days. But I appreciate so much more now. And, you know, I say this, I've said this to Mike too, because he had a different path. He didn't, you know, go through the local news. He started Sirius and NBA TV and then straight to ESPN. So he had because he was as good as he is, he had a very different path than I did. And I, you know, I kind of give him a hard time about this, but it's like his perspective of the things that we don't have here at Pac-12 is so different than what my perspective is. Cause I'm like, we have Ryan McGrady, the researcher. Like, that's the best thing ever. Like, I have somebody who I can email and ask a question to. Like, I don't have to go back and try and do all the stuff, or, you know, people cutting. There was, when I first got here, like, I was stressed out that I wasn't cutting my own highlights. Like, I wanted to cut the highlights because I was so used to cutting them all. Like, you, when you're in local news, you shoot everything, you produce everything, you write everything, you edit everything, and you have full control. And it's, you know, stressful as hell, but it's like, you have a much bigger appreciation now that we have. I look at our bullpen and I'm like, man, we got people running around like mad in there, all cutting highlights and doing all the stuff. And we've got feature producers. Like, I go on a feature shoot and I just have to sit down and do the interview. And I, you know, I have input on how we put the features together sometimes, but like for the most part, compared to what I was doing before, it's like night and day.
Right.
So I would say that I'm so grateful that I had those experiences and I learned from some incredible people. And like when I actually really think about kind of the grind that you, and that the drive for the grind that you develop, it was definitely built, you know, in those local newsroom walls, making $22,000 a year.
Killing it.
Killing it.
So I've had a chance to meet your dad, and a lot of people have, and he's this really cool storyteller, right? At your wedding, he tells this amazing story that still gives me the chills about how life is always about looking up, and, you know, you don't walk down the aisle, walk up the aisle. All these amazing anecdotes. You referenced that you're about to be mom. Curious where you think storytelling fits into your life now that you're about to be responsible for one like your dad was with yours?
That was a great question. Yeah, there's a lot of different ways I could answer that. I think storytelling was a huge part of my life growing up because of my dad. We used to, I remember when I was younger, we had this game that we played that he would pick three seemingly unrelated things and would tell me. I mean, this started from when I was like 7 or 8 years old, and he would say, okay, now tell a story about these three. You know, it would be like a garbage can, you know, like a wheel and a girl named Sarah, or what, you know, whatever it was. And I would try and come up with a story about those three things. And that was like, honestly, probably how I started telling stories and loving stories from a very young age. It was really cool. And probably a good way for him to distract me from whatever it was that I was being a little pain in the butt about at the time. But, yeah, so I grew up, you know, around story. And as you said, my dad is, that's one of his biggest things. And the reason that I teach a storytelling class now that you know well. But I think it's everything. Like, I think the way that kids learn is through storytelling. The way that we all learn is through story. So I think, to me, being able to pass those stories on to my son, God, that sounds weird. is going to be a huge part of being a parent and being a mom. And I think that is, that's how we teach. That's how people learn. And that's how we teach our kids things. And that's how we are able to connect with others is through story. So I think it's going to be a huge, huge part of being a parent. And the thought of being a parent is terrifying a little bit on some levels. You know, I can barely get myself out the door some days, but, you know, I do. I think that storytelling is that's a great question, because I hadn't really thought about it until just now. But I think that's a huge part of being able to teach someone things and also share your experiences with them. I think a lot of kids grow up, and I certainly was like this. You know, I thought my parents were just like a peripheral extension of my life. Like, they just happened to be there because I like it, but it was my house and my dog and like my car, and you know, everything was about me. I was very, very, very egocentric, I think, as most kids probably are. And then you get older and you realize, like, no, I'm just like kind of an offshoot of, like, they had their own lives before me and have done a lot of amazing things, and I happen to be lucky enough to get born into this family. But it has nothing to do, you know, your perspective totally changes. And it really started with that, with, you know, my dad, my mom, my stepmom sharing their stories of their life, and understanding that these are real people and not just my parents who were there to put food on the table for me and take me to soccer practice.
So, curious on this. Your first couple of jobs, you're a quote-unquote reporter, right? That's your job. Like, your job is to report, and anchor as well, but you're reporting, right? You just talk, you shot, you edited, you wrote all your stuff that you reported on. Well, when I hear the word reporter, I always think like somebody's just telling you the facts of it's raining outside. But every time I see you on air, I would never put Pac-12 Network reporter, right? Or Albany News reporter. It'd be like storyteller, because there's always a side of your personality that comes out. There's an antidote. There's a story. There's something memorable about it. Do you think that blended over naturally for you? Did you even know what was happening? Or were you that reporter of, here it is, it's sunny outside, and back to you?
Yeah, so that, the latter, first, for
I
sure.
I can't imagine that.
But because I was so, you have to understand, like, I was so nervous when I first started. Like, I will never forget my very first live hit. I was, it was when I was in Albany, and I was the sideline reporter for the Siena women's basketball game on Time Warner Cable. There were maybe 10 people in the stands, and there was maybe, like, 3 people watching at home, honestly. And I was so nervous that, like, right before they tossed to me, and I'd done a million, like, fake stand-ups where you look into the camera, or even, you know, taped stuff that had aired, but I'd never been live before. And it was to the point that I thought that, like, I wasn't going to be able to speak. I thought I was going to pee my pants. Like, I told the producer, I was like, I think you're going to have to skip my open. Like, don't come to me. Don't come to me. And he was like, we're coming to you in 5, 4. And I thought I was just going to, like, spontaneously, like, combust, because I was that nervous. And I got through, I, like, completely blacked out. I don't even remember what I said. I had memorized it. It was like a 25-second hit, and I had every single word, like, in, you know, ingrained in my brain. But I remember afterwards thinking, like, that's not how I should feel. Like, maybe this isn't the right line of work for me, because I don't feel like you shouldn't feel like you want to die before you do something that is part of your job. And I tell people that all the time. I'm like, so those nerves and that, like, that feeling of being completely terrified and out of your comfort zone, that's part of it. And if you feel that, especially early on, it's fine. Like, you will get through it. I got through it. And you learn how to, it's just reps, you know, it's reps. So to answer your question, I was so nervous early on when I first started because I didn't want to mess up. And, you know, you want people to take you seriously. There was still definitely that kind of imposter syndrome of, you know, do I know enough to be doing this job? And so I think that early on I was so nervous that I just made everything very much like a report. Like, I was just going to tell you, I had no opinion on anything, but I was going to tell you exactly what, you know, maybe the stats or what happened or whatever. And I realized along the way, and it probably wasn't until a couple years in, that there was a reporter who I really admired who was in Syracuse, and he was a news reporter, but he always gave an anecdote when he would either in his intro or his tag, and he'd have to be doing a hard news story, but he would always give something that he saw or that somebody said to him or a quote, something that like grabbed him. And that was how he would either set up or tie together his story. And I remember thinking like, oh yeah, I should maybe start paying attention to some of that stuff. Like, when you're at the game and you're down the sideline, the whole point of your job, if you're doing sidelines or if you're an analyst, is to be able to tell the viewer something that they can't see or don't know. And so something that interests me is most likely going to interest, you know, the viewer at home. And so you just shift your frame of thinking, and it can be a little bit, you know, at first it doesn't come natural because you're shifting away from, okay, I know exactly what I'm going to say the day before, you know, 2 days before, I know what my intro is going to be. And it's like, well, you don't know, you know, if you're going into it like that, which is how I used to do it, a lot of times you're missing the story.
Why do you think we do that? Cause I used to do that. I used to go for a run when I was doing, like, whether it was sideline my 1 year there or early on in the booth, like six, seven years ago. And I'd like go for this 2 mile run and I'd just talk my open, you know, and you knew your 3 points.
Uh-huh.
Like and I put stress on myself, and it wasn't until the last couple of years that I walk into the booth and I'm like, what are we talking about? Like, because yeah. I know the game. Where are we going?
Right.
Why do we do that?
I think it only comes with experience and knowing the game as well. As, you know, I'm sure that you know the game and the Pac-12 in a different way than you did,
yeah.
You know, 4 years ago. I certainly do. And I think, I shouldn't say the game because you've known the game for a very long time, but knowing like some of the storylines within the Pac-12 in a different way. But I think that's exactly why. I think it's like when you're nervous and you just want to know and have control over, you know, what it is that you're going to say so that you aren't exposed. I mean, that was, for me at least, that's what it was. It was like, I didn't want to be exposed. And so I wanted to know, I prepped so much material that was like, okay, this is exactly what I'm going to say, and this is how I'm going to say it, and I'm going to use this word. And then all of a sudden, I'd be in an open for like a high school football game, and I would say the wrong word, and it would be like the train would go off the track because I was so hell bent on saying exactly what I had memorized, and I had said it to myself in the mirror 800 times. And it's like, then you get to the game, and what if you see the coach reading the riot act to his quarterback before kickoff? Or, you know what I mean? There were so many things that you just miss because you're like staring at your notes and you're like, okay, I got to hit that word, and I'm going to toss back like this, and maybe I'll try and throw a joke in at the end here, you know.
Right.
It's like, yeah, and it's not date. Organic. Yeah, yeah, it's exactly what it is. It's a really bad date. Whereas when you're on a good date and you're just like flowing and it's going back and forth and you like, I realize like you're comfortable, and all of a sudden that's a great analogy because it is, it's a comfort level, and being comfortable in your own skin, I think is one of the biggest parts of it.
So take us inside your mind now. I mean, you do a lot of the Pac-12, you host Sports Report, you host the pregame show, you've done sideline. I mean, you every time you're on, I'm in. Or when you interview coaches, they seem so relaxed. Like, what do you do now in your preparations that's different to allow yourself to still play at the highest of levels, but be fully embodied in Ashley Adamson?
Yeah, I think part of it is going back to what we said, a comfort level. You know, like I'm more comfortable in who I am. I know you talk about and have talked about voice a lot and finding your voice. And I think that's something that, you know, an advice that I try to give to younger people who are coming up and through this business is finding your voice is such an important thing. But I remember when I was in grad school, and I think, I don't know if it was Sean McDonough or somebody came in and spoke at a class, and they said, you know, you got to find your voice and you got to be authentic. And I remember thinking like, what the hell is that? Like, I'm 20. I don't know what my voice is. I have no idea where my comfort level is. And it's a matter of going through it and find, you know, I know you've given the advice of, you know, you read the New York Times out loud. I think that's brilliant. Like, you find your voice in a lot of different ways. And one of the ways that I feel like I've found mine is being more comfortable in the material and knowing these coaches. And really it all comes down to the relationships. being able to be around coaches and players and your analysts, really, the people that you work with and your co-hosts, that you have a rapport and a meaningful relationship with them outside of, I'm here to ask you a question and you're here to answer it. And I think one of the things that's been really cool about working here that I love is that we have time. There's time set up throughout the year for us to be able to do that. Media days, you know, I've worked the last couple of years, I've done a lot of stuff with our digital team. And the Digital Plaza is set up, for anyone who's watched any of our stuff or follow us on social. It's set up kind of like, you know, like a fun house. Like there's all of these things. We had Mike Leach in the pinata a couple years ago. We had, you know, a cornhole game going on that the coaches got really into. And it really is like set aside time. Not that we're trying to get a soundbite for a feature down the road, but it's like get to know and be able to talk to these coaches and these players when you're not trying to ask them about like the key to the second half. And I think that's such a huge, the people who are good at their jobs in media, I think it all starts with the relationships that they have with, you know, the people who they're covering. And that's such a, you know, it's a unique thing about, I think, working at the Pac-12 is that we have a lot more opportunities to kind of get to know some of these guys separately, away from the field of play. And I think it's something that, you know, that you do very well, that I admire, and the relationships that you have with the coaches and the players. And they give you different stuff if they're comfortable with you. And if you're not asking, you know, the same question that they get 800 times. Here's a perfect example. We had Chris Peterson on this morning, and he was great. And he has a reputation for being, I don't want to say stiff or like tough on the media, but if Chris Peterson never had to do another media interview again, I think he would be very happy. I think we could say that. And I would say that if he was sitting right here, and he would probably agree. He has a great, hilarious personality, playful personality. You know him better than I do. You got to figure out how to ask questions that are going to get that side of him to come out. Because if you ask him for the 800th time about Troy Williams, you're going to get the answer that you know. And so I always say when I'm writing questions for coaches, I always think, can I answer this question for me? Like, do I know what he's going to say? Almost kind of the same as this podcast, honestly. Like I had like three questions written for Peterson this morning that I completely erased because I was like, I know exactly what he's going to say. And I may be able to ask a different coach that, but if I ask him this question, he's going to give me the most like coach speak answer. I could say verbatim what he was going to say. And so I'm like, that's not a good question. I don't want to ask that question. So you just try and figure out a different way to get people to talk about something different, and to be able to kind of, you know, have some fun. And sometimes it blows up in your face every now and then, especially I think with student athletes is always a really fun, interesting dynamic, because sometimes, you know, you're doing those campus cam interviews and they can't necessarily see you. And it's not like you and I sitting right here right now looking at each other. They're on a campus cam all the way, you know, several hundred miles away, and all they can do is hear me in their IFB that's probably falling out. Right. And I'm trying to like engage with them and have some sort of rapport, and they're like, what is this lady talking about? So there are, you know, there's different challenges that come up, and sometimes you fall flat on your face, and then you just later say, well, let's just cut that. Let's cut that one exchange out, because that was pretty awkward. But yeah, I do. I don't even remember what your question was or if I answered it, but I do think that being able to prep and go into my job now is a lot. I do a lot of the same stuff. I try and come into each game with storylines that I know that, you know, if my mind goes blank in post game questions, because when you're on the field after a game and there's a million things going on, it's easy to kind of get lost in the moment and be like, oh God, what was I going to ask? Or what does this mean now? And what does this win do? And and if you have some storylines going into it that you know that you can just are kind of your go-to fallback. So if they win, so I would always have like, if I was covering the game this weekend, a Utah winning scenario and a UW winning scenario. And I would make sure that I had some of those points and talking points and know who to look ahead to. And just those little things that can kind of give you a comfort zone of being able to check down on, okay, what is it that I actually want to get across here? And if, you know, the story of the game can take you so far, and obviously you want to talk about that, but there's a lot of other stuff I think that you can come prepared with in those situations.
You get asked this a lot, what it's like to be a female in a sport culture that is predominantly male. I'm curious, prior to here and then now here at the Pac-12, your answer, because I think it's cool here at the Pac-12. Our president's a female. It's really unique. But also, as that has happened in this era of your career, social media has ramped up and people have access. And I used to work with Sam Ponder. I see what she goes through. I've seen what you go through. I mean, it's not the easiest. Maybe, I don't know if it's easy or not, but it's not comfortable for me just to read comments that sometimes you get. But I'm curious what it's like to be a woman in the first stage of your career, and then now, and then maybe even projecting further, because now you're going to be a mom. And do you feel that changes dynamics?
Yeah. So I think you put it perfectly, because it has been different. I think when I first started off being a female, I constantly felt, like I said earlier, like that I had to prove myself, and that if I mispronounced a name or that if I got something wrong, like that people were just going to be like, oh, she's a dumb girl who has no idea what she's talking about and doesn't belong in sports. Like, I was so afraid of that, because that's what you hear, right? I mean, even growing up, like, I can't even tell you how many times when I first got into the business, or even like in grad school, and these are just like knucklehead 20-year-old dudes probably in retrospect, but I would, someone would ask, like, what do you want to do? And I would tell them, I'd be like, I want to get into sports broadcasting. And all of a sudden, they would just start quizzing you. And it was like,
so lame.
It's so lame. And I remember thinking, like, maybe I don't know enough. Like, yeah, I guess this guy knows more about, I don't remember Joe DiMaggio's hitting streak and exactly what it was. And I don't remember, like, how many NBA titles the Celtics won in a row in the 60s. Like, you know what I mean? Like, stuff that is, sports trivia that they would pull out to try and, like, make themselves feel like they knew way more than you. And so I used to get that all the time. And so when I first started, it was very much that, like, I was trying to prove myself and whatever, and, make sure that as a woman that I had even more credibility, that I needed to feel like I had more credibility because I was already up against it. But that has really changed, I think. And a lot of it is because there are just so many more amazing women in our business and that do such an incredible job. You bring up Sam Ponder. I'm a huge, huge fan of hers. Doris Burke is like one of my all time favorites. And she actually, she had a great interview the other day that I read that she basically said, and I'm not going to say it as eloquently as her, but she was asked about the dynamic of younger women coming in and taking her job, essentially. Like, are you ever concerned about that as you get older? And it's true. I mean, aging on the air is something that I think especially women are attuned to and feel and are acutely aware of. And she said, I feel like I will have, done my job if this, and she goes, I hope they come and take my job. Like, I hope that what I have done in my career makes it easier for them to come up and take my job. And it was, and she goes, in that way, I will have felt successful. It was something along those lines. And I remember thinking, like, that is exactly it. That is 100% it. Because there were so many women who came before us who were amazing and sort of laid the foundation and the path. And they had to go through stuff that I, even without social media, could never imagine having to go through. And if I can make it a little bit easier for the next, Ashley Adamson to come up and who's terrified and doesn't know what she's doing and trying to figure it out and moving all around the country, and that I would feel like my career was a success if that was the case. And so I do feel, and then to talk about being at the Pac-12, it's so unique because my direct boss is a woman. The president of the network is a woman. I work with Colleen Farrell, our producer, obviously a woman, in all the most of the shows that I do. Like, we are surrounded by, like, such strong, awesome, intelligent, powerful women. And it's normal now. Like, I don't even think about it anymore. And we have a friend who works here who came from a different network, not ESPN. Everyone thinks that when you say a different network, they mean ESPN. I'm not going to say which network it was, but she said she was like, it was like an old all boys club. And she was one of the only women. And it was, something that I think was really, when she came here, it was eye opening for her. And she said, it's totally different here. So I think now I'm in a place that's much different, and I'm thankful that it doesn't even occur to me. There's still some stuff that happens that you feel like, okay, that's, that maybe is a little bit of a difference. Mike Yam and I are getting a little bit of different treatment on some things, but for the most part, I feel really empowered in my job here. And as far as the social media stuff goes, I would say that I'm really lucky because my job here is different than Sarah Spain, for example, or someone who is paid to give their opinion. I'm not paid to give my opinion. Every now and then, I think you could probably, if you watch enough, have a feeling that I feel strongly or something about a certain topic. But I'm not paid to give my opinion. So the role that I have here, and I say this all the time, it's like to shine a spotlight on all the amazing things going on in our conference. And we are here to, like, uplift the student athletes and follow the really great stories that aren't always being told. We're not in the grimy, seedy, like, let's out everyone that we can. It's just not who we are. We're owned by the conference. We're, you know, we're partners with the 12 schools. And so I remember leaving local news thinking that I was going to miss that, thinking that I was going to miss that sort of like, almost like rat race of who's got, you know, the breaking news and who can tell you that this person's out with injury before the other person. My news director in Indianapolis was huge on breaking news. Like if we weren't, if we didn't have scoop almost every single day, like she was upset. And I don't miss that at all. Like it's the, one of the best things about this job is that you get to focus on the awesome, amazing stories. And there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them rather than trying to get into the nitty gritty, you know, BS of what I think a lot of times when people hear the word media, there's a very negative connotation associated with it. And I think that's one of the reasons why. So that's all to say, in social media, I don't get as much of the animosity and just like, I mean, you get it a little bit, but right. For the most part, it's people who love the Pac-12 or have a Pac-12 school that they love or went to, and they're excited to hear about the player that you talk to or the coach that you talk to. And I'm not putting stuff out there that is, you know, like the hot takes of right. whatever some media entities are paid to do. So
what's your advice to men, whether they're coaches, whether they're young athletes, whether they're fans, on your craft, what they don't know? You know, you said that sometimes men had looked at you as, well, what does she know about sports, basically, right? And I look at a lot of men in the industry, and I'm like, what do you know about sports?
Yeah,
or
<true.
laughs> whatever. Which and they might say that about me. That, yeah. I don't care. That's fine. But I'd be curious because I think they should listen to that. So what would you say?
Oh, man, that's a great question, Yogi. I've never been asked that before. I think a lot of it is that I'm big on, and maybe this is because I've just been reading a lot of books recently about like how to raise kids, and I've been more in tune to some of that stuff. And one of the things that I've been reading a lot about is empathy and being able to, like, the number one thing that leads to happiness that they have found is people who are empathetic. And that essentially is, for lack of a better way to say it, like trying on other people's emotions, like putting yourself in other people's shoes and understanding where they're coming from and not immediately seeing everything through your own lens, because that's what we're all programmed to do, right? Like you do something and I interpret it as something that through my glasses. Like I think that you do something that affects me and I'm thinking that you did it because of X, Y, and Z reason. Whereas there could be a thousand reasons that you do what you do. So I think that a big part of that is empathy. So that would probably be my advice is understanding where everyone's coming from. And that's women and men. And understanding kind of what our job is. And that we're not here. I tell student athletes when we do media training stuff all the time, like, yeah, you need to be careful around media. And I understand that there are media members out there who are kind of out to burn you or take things that you say out of context or whatever it may be. But in the end, like, my job is to have people, if it's for you to be able to tell your story and for you to be able to, like, build your brand almost through the media and let people know who you are and what you're about. Like, that's what I'm here for. That's what I'm interested in. So I think that, you know, I think empathy is a huge, huge, huge part of it. And understanding that, like, I'm not just somebody with a microphone who's sticking it in your face and trying to, like, get a soundbite for the 11 o'clock news, like that I'm here for a bigger purpose. And that falls on me too. You know, I think it falls on the media to not fall into those traps of trying to get the scoop for their news director, of trying to, you know, be the one who always gets the, you know, whatever the breaking news is first. And to realize that, like, these coaches and these student athletes, they're people and they have families and they have a whole slew of things going on behind closed doors that you have no idea about. And the same thing goes for reporters and members of the media. So I think it that's, like, the number one thing I would say for everybody is just to kind of keep that in mind, that something that the way that you treat somebody, you know, is that how you would treat your sister? Is that how you would treat your girlfriend or your daughter? Or is that how you want your mom to be treated? I mean, right. It sounds so, like, simplistic and, you know, kind of cliched, but it is true. It's, I think empathy is a huge, huge part of it.
Love that. It's a great word. Okay. So I want to know, how do you practice? Like, how do you work your skill set? Because I think, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but as you get to the level that, you know, we're at now with the Pac-12 network, you still yearn as an athletically minded individual to get coached. Right. And we're lucky here. We get some of that. But I'm curious how you work on your craft on your own. You know, what do you do? Like, how do you get better? And I wonder if it's your class, because you alluded to it earlier. You teach an amazing class on storytelling, but I don't know if those fit or not, but I'm curious how you practice. How do you get your workout in of what is your skill set, which is your job, which is your provider for now, this new baby, to put a little pressure on you?
Yeah, thanks for that. No, I think part of it, yeah, I do. I think being a teacher has, you know, what's that old saying about how to really understand, you have to teach. And I think that that's so true. Like, I think that I have understood so much more about what it takes to be a storyteller, having had to get up in front of, you know, 30, 40 students and teach them what it's like to be a storyteller. And I think that in terms of practicing, like, it's, the good news is you get a lot of practice here, because you get a lot of live reps, is I guess how I would put it. And there's stuff that you take away from each interview or each, I mean, there's so many things that you file away, like something happens on the air that kind of, you know, everything kind of goes to hell, and maybe the highlights wrong, or maybe something that you thought was going to happen, the board doesn't pop up and then you're on camera, or the prompter goes out, or whatever the case may be. In live television, there's always stuff, as you know, that goes wrong. And each time that something happens, you either handle it well or don't handle it well, but you kind of file it away. And there have been plenty of times that I have realized, like, okay, I didn't handle that well. Next time, this is what I'll say. And when you're in those situations again, you kind of know what to do. It's like, I mean, it's exactly like playing sports, like you said. It's those, like, reps that you get that you finally understand, okay, in this situation, I know what to do. Whereas before, it was like I just would freeze or be super awkward or say something that didn't make sense or whatever the case may have been. So I think part of it is just actually being able to do the job every single day. And those are the live reps are what you need. And I just think that the feedback that you can get from people, and it's hard to get feedback in this business. I don't know. Everywhere that I've been, you get some, but I think there's like a weird, I think in our, I don't know if it's this industry or our culture or what it is, but having people who can give you really constructive feedback continuously is hard to find those people. And because it's hard work to do. I mean, I think when I try and critique, you know, if somebody sends me their reel and I send them feedback, it takes a lot of work to kind of figure out, okay, here's what I'm picking up on. Like, here's where I think you could maybe work. Because also, it's hard to tell someone, like, hey, don't talk like that. Or, like, smile. Don't say that. Yeah, smile. Like, look like you're not, you know, being, like, knifed in the back when you're talking about sports, because this is fun. But, or, you know, whatever the case may be. And so there's little things that you try and pick out that when you tell people. So I understand that that dynamic isn't necessarily comfortable. But I've had a few producers who have really... and mentors who have kind of coached me along the way and told me some things. My agent gives me feedback. You know, I'll send him some stuff that I do, and he'll give me. And it's little stuff at this point, you know, of like, think about this or think about that. Because if you try and do too much, or if you're trying to, you know, be Bob Costas or whatever, you're going to fall flat on your face. But if there's little things here and there that you can kind of focus on as you go through. And the other big thing is, and I hate doing this and I don't do it enough, is watching yourself. You have to go back and like, you know, you talk about doing self scouts, and I don't do that enough. And it's something that because it's hard to watch yourself on camera. You know, it's not like a comfortable thing to go back, because then you're like, man, I should have said that. Or I thought this came across totally different than it actually did. Or you pick up on different little like bad habits that you're collecting. Like I did this, I remember when I was in Syracuse, this is so weird. I realized in my live hits when I was out in the field, and obviously this isn't on video, so your listeners, I'll try and explain it, but I was doing this weird thing where like I would hold the microphone with one hand, and I don't know if it was like a nervous tick or what, but I would like start doing like a chicken wing, like on my left arm. I'd start watching some of my stuff, and I'm like, I'm doing this weird like chicken flap with my free hand, like, what the hell is that?
Totally.
And you don't really, of course you don't realize you're doing it, because it's just like something weird that you feel like is, you know, again, it's like a nervous tick. I don't know what it was. And so until you like actually go back and watch yourself, you have no idea that you're all of a sudden doing a chicken dance on 11 o'clock news. So you have to watch yourself. As painful as it is, you have to go back and watch yourself.
I agree. My mom is like the harshest critic for me. She'll call, I remember a couple of years ago on this network, she's like, every time you disagree with somebody, you like pucker your face. She's like, can you stop do that? And I watched a couple back and I was like, you're right. Every time I'd be like,
Mom's
Nigel
no.
or whatever I was thinking, you know. No.
Well, and everyone has crutch phrases too. That's the other thing.
Oh, like, I get killed for those.
Yeah, and yeah. I do too. Because and that's the thing is you they're crutch phrases because they, you know, they're kind of your go-to and it's easy. It's the easier thing to say. So I do. It's when you until you watch yourself, it's really really hard to like understand exactly some of the stuff that's coming across. My mom gives me great feedback. She's always like, that shirt didn't work. Or like, no, that was a great skirt and I liked your lipstick. Like my mom, I love my mom's feedback.
Totally.
Yeah.
Parents can just give it to you.
They can. Yeah. They've been giving it to you since day one.
Seriously. So. Well, you're about to go down that road. All right. Last couple. We'll get you out of here. I'd love to know what's impacted you the most since you've been at the Pac-12 or who has impacted you most since you've been at the Pac-12.
That's a great question.
Because you've been here, and for those that aren't aware, like you've been here from day one. Like you and Mike Yam were the first talent hires. You're the faces of the network. You're on every show. And we started from the ground up, which is we're all proud of that, of this kind of upstart company that is now getting really rolling. You know, we just picked up another 4 million subscribers, and we're on Sling. And, you know, we're just getting going, but curious, and hopefully bought you a little time there to –
Yeah, I know. I appreciated that you were doing that because you can tell that the wheels are spinning. And the reason that I hesitate is because I feel like I could name 20 people off the top of my head. I feel like I could name like 15 experiences that have, you know, helped shape this overall experience for me in a lot of different ways.
Was there a moment, though, where you were like, wow, we're doing this. This is really cool. Outside of the first night.
Yeah. Yeah, the first night was so awesome.
Yeah, we'll link that in the blog. We have that on YouTube. Yeah.
You know what I think it is? I think that there are moments along the way, like in everything, like, you know, whenever we take a step back and we do, you know, the year end celebration of like when we did 850 live events last year and we, you know, you go to the rooftop and everybody has a glass of champagne and you kind of step back. I think that those are always, of course, the moments that you are able to sort of pull back because it's easy to get into the grind of the year and all of a sudden, especially like this time of the year when it's basketball starting and football still like in the heat of it, you just get, it's like a whirlwind. And so I think that those moments that they've created, that they've done a really good job here of saying like, let's celebrate these moments. But I think the bigger thing that I would say about working here that's really impacted me, and this isn't just because I'm on your podcast, but I would say this to anyone, like the people who we get to work with, you and Mike and Curtis and Nick Eliotti, like we have some of the best people that I have ever met in like broadcasting. And there are a lot of, you know, a lot of different places I've worked and a lot of different networks where I have friends that work, that there's a lot of egos in television. And I think that's part of it. I think because I think that it all plays into it is there's a lot of ego in sport too, because there has to be, right? Like if you're going to go out there and be the guy, you got to think that you know that you're the guy. So you understand kind of how that happens. But I would say the thing that I love the most and that has impacted me the most here is that I've made like some of my best friends in the world, as cheesy as that is. Like I have such wonderful relationships with the people that we work with, you know, almost everyone, every single person here, I absolutely love being around, and they feel for the most part as passionate about the job as I do. And that's a really unique thing and not something that I take for granted at all. And not something that, you know, I don't think about a lot because it helps me raise my game. Like being around, when you come in fired up on Thursday and I know you're going to be on the show, like it fires me up. I'm like, okay, yeah, let's do this. When, you know, Nick Eliotti was just slaying me the other morning in the morning meeting. Like, I don't know what he had for breakfast, but he was on fire. He was like running around the table at like 8 a.m. screaming, I love ball. And I'm like, what is going on? But it just, you know, we're around really, really, really awesome people. And it has impacted the way that I feel about my job because the people who you are around inevitably, you know, affect how you feel about whatever it is that you're doing, whether that's at home or at work. And I think that the one thing that has been really special about this place is that the people that I've gotten to work with, I feel very close to both when we're doing work and when we're away from it. Like I feel like they're people who I would gravitate to and want to be around, even if, you know, we didn't work at Pac-12 together. So that's a, you know, maybe a little bit of a non-answer because I didn't give you any specifics, but it's the people that we are with here is what has made all the difference in this experience for me.
What have you learned most from Mike Yim?
That I thought I was competitive until I met him.
He takes
that to a whole new level. I loved your guys' podcast. You guys did it in Eugene, right?
Yeah.
Was that his or yours? Because I know you both went on each other's. But
oh, yeah. We did both there.
When you asked him about the story that he told, I was just like in my car laughing so hard about when he was at Fordham and that he got into play-by-play so that he could get that award that they give out at the end of the year.
He's
actually the most competitive person I have ever met in my life. So, yeah, I thought I was super competitive, and then I met Mike, and I'm like, oh, no, I couldn't care less compared to this guy. Which is a good thing. I love it. I appreciate that because he cares.
That's amazing. All right, I like to ask these last couple of questions to everybody. What makes you feel the most alive?
My family, I would say. Being around my family, and I feel like I hit the family jackpot, both with my parents and my siblings. I'm one of four, and everyone's starting to have kids now. My brother, my older brother, has three little ones, and my sister-in-law has a little one, and my little sister has a little 3-year-old boy. And being around my family is the very best thing in the world. And I love my job, and I love my friends, but I think when I feel the happiest truly is when I'm at home with my family.
How have you, in this ever competitive market of media, been able to either temper or quiet or maybe not just share, or maybe that's not the right description, a desire to Good Morning America, Today Show, College Game? I mean, you're good enough to do any of those. You know that. Your agent knows that. Anyone who watches you knows that. But I'm curious how you deal with that, because what you just described is what everybody describes in the media once they're fired. They're like, man, what matters is your family. And I screwed it up. You haven't screwed it up.
Yeah.
So I'm curious your take on that.
Well, I think that's exactly what you just said, Yogs. Like, I think this is, and I'm so grateful for it, to go back to what I said at the beginning, to have the feeling that I have, quote unquote, arrived. I hate that, like, phrase, but to feel like I'm doing the job at a very high level of what I've always dreamed about doing, which is being a sports broadcaster, but also getting to spend time with my family and seeing my husband and being able to have a life outside of work, which for a very long time I didn't have and didn't think that I would have. And being at the Pac-12 has allowed me to do that. I think if grass is not always greener, and I think it's really easy to think, oh, it'd be cool if I could one day, you know, everyone thinks, and I get asked all the time, like, well, so when are you going to go to ESPN, or when are you going to try and go to NFL Network, and how much longer do you have on your current contract at Pac-12, and when are you going to get out of there? And this is not a stepping stone job. This is a destination job, and I'm not saying that because I hope, you know, my bosses are listening. I really do feel like if this was my last TV job, I would be completely fulfilled. And you never know what's down the road. I mean, you have no idea. I used to get such a hard time when I was in Syracuse. People would always ask me where I wanted to go next. And I would, my canned response, because I got asked it so much, was, well, I just, wherever I want to go next, I want to go to a place that's like a little, you know, that I want to be. I'm not just going to like move to Indianapolis. That was my canned response. Where did I end up going? Like, it was like God being like, you idiot, you're going to Indianapolis. Yeah. So I'm careful not to say that, you know, you never know how things are going to play out. But I can't imagine. I love being in San Francisco. I live across the street from my brother and my sister-in-law and their three little ones. My other brother and sister-in-law live down the street. My mom's in Napa. Like, the rest of my family's in Southern California. It doesn't get any better in terms of being really fulfilled and happy professionally and being really fulfilled and happy personally. And I hope that everyone at some point gets to experience that feeling, because it's amazing. And it makes you, you know, I don't want to say you care less, but you care less about the dumb stuff. Like the stuff that used to get me riled up and be like, oh, I can't believe we ran the wrong VO, or I can't believe I mispronounced that, or, you know, the sky is crumbling because we didn't have the full screen graphic that we wanted. Like, that stuff just doesn't matter as much anymore. And you care, of course, but it everything is put in perspective. And I think that's a big thing that I've been able to have here is perspective. So I don't want to say I would never go take one of those jobs because, you know, you never say never, but I thought I would never move to Indianapolis.
let's just say you're not moving back to Indianapolis.
I don't picture myself moving back to any of those places. Although I love those people there, and if they're listening, right. I love you guys, and you're all wonderful and a reason who I am today. But yeah, I'm really happy here, and I mean that. I don't take it for granted for one second, even on the bad days, and everybody has bad days, but even on the bad days, this place is an amazing, amazing, amazing place to work.
Wow. So clearly you're stoked right now. And I know you listen to this analogy. I think that we all have this like inner flame. And you said it earlier, you want to be the light kind of when you walk into that room, like that story you were told in Indianapolis from the Butler head coach at the time. Curious if you stepped outside of yourself now. You're about to have a baby. You're with your family. You clearly love your job. You just stated it for the world to hear. But how would you describe the flame of you if you had to look at yourself as you walked into a room?
Well, I think you talk about on this podcast, I've heard you talk a lot about going for it. And like, to me, there's no higher level of going for it than becoming a parent for the first time. And so I think like that's something that is obviously at the forefront of my mind as I'm a couple weeks away from doing this thing, hopefully at least a couple weeks. You may be doing the show solo tonight. We'll see how things go. But no, I think that that is kind of what's sort of consumed a lot of my thought and attention and most recently is trying to figure out how to be the best parent. And I will say one of my favorite things about being, this doesn't really answer your question, but it just popped into my head, so I'm going to share it with you. But one of the things that I love about working here is there are so many incredible student athletes that we are around that I'm like, man, if I can't figure out how to raise this kid, I'm just going to send him to go live with like Lisa and Ed McCaffrey because they know what they're doing. Or, you know what I mean? That there's so many, totally. Like it, with all of the like awful, awful stuff going on in our world right now, sometimes I'm like, what am I doing bringing a kid into this world? And then I look around and I'm like, there are so many amazing, amazing young people who are inspiring for a million different reasons. And it sounds lame, but like it does, it like gives me hope. Like I'm like, okay, no, they could, you know, hopefully maybe turn out that well, or I could impact, you know, have an impact on somebody who actually does like make a big difference in the world. And I think that's what you want, right? You want to be able to, at the end of the day, feel like you didn't just take part in didn't follow a career path that was completely self-serving. And that was something that was a big reason why I got into teaching, honestly, because I think a lot of times in the broadcasting world, all of a sudden you can feel like everything that you're doing sometimes is a little bit selfish.
Yeah.
And self-serving. And I think with teaching is that's totally it's the opposite of that. You feel like you're doing it solely for others. And I think that storytelling, again, to go back to put the bow on that, like if I can tell a good story here and share the stories of all these amazing Pac-12 student athletes, like then I am doing a service. And that is something it's not about me. It's not about me and you guys want to hear and look at me all day. They don't. Like it's about being able to kind of shine a light on those stories. So again, I don't know if I just answered your question, but
no, I think you did a pretty good job. How do you feel, Ashley, lastly, how do you feel about the word limits?
I think it's a word that we all unfortunately have kind of like ingrained, whether consciously or subconsciously, into our, you know, minds. And that whether you think you have them or whether you don't, it's something that I think, you know, I certainly know that I feel like I have limits and that there are certain things that you sort of, they're like self-manifestations, you know, like you create them. And when you actually like step back and peel everything back and look at some of the stuff that you think you can or can't do, it's all self-made. And so I do. I think, you know, I love that this podcast is called Life Without Limits because I'm a big believer in that all of the stuff that we put on ourselves is stuff that's exactly that. It's stuff that we put on ourselves. It's not what other people are putting on us. It's what we interpret. My dad, who gives incredible advice, I didn't take it for many, many, many years. He always said, he's like, I've been giving you this advice your whole life and you just started taking it. But I think my favorite piece of advice that he ever gave me was that people can help you and be a part of your happiness, but ultimately it all comes down your happiness is completely up to you. And there will be people along the way in your life that you meet who can, you know, will help that and hinder that. But ultimately, it's up to you how happy you are. And I think a lot of that goes with what limits are you putting on yourself that maybe you don't even realize. Because when you're, you know, in order to kind of get to that level and to be happy and to find that, it's you got to take that all away. You got to strip it back. So
I love
that's
that.
What I would say. Yeah, well, no, it's good.
Everybody should take your class.
Well, because you're the highlight of it.
That's not true.
Yeah.
How can people get in touch with you?
Anyway, social media at Adamson Ashley. I'm on Facebook. You guys can email me at aadamson@pack-12.org. I was about to give up my cell phone number. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, don't do that.
And I'm not going to Kevin O'Neill it.
Don't do it.
But no, I love to hear from people. And I think that's one of the last thing from me. And then I'll stop talking because I feel like I've just been rambling for the last hour. But, oh, we get to tape soon. Nice.
Yes,
this is good. This was a great use of our afternoon. No, I think that, oh, man, baby brain. I don't remember what I was just about to say. What
Social
were we talking
media.
About? Social media.
People
yeah.
get in touch with you.
Oh, I love to hear from people. And I do feel like you taught me a really important thing, which is to have a philosophy. And part of my philosophy is to pay it forward. And I have been given so much by so many people and some of the mentors that I mentioned earlier that I remember in Boston, one of my biggest mentors, his name is Bill Fine. I said to him one time, I was like, I just feel bad because I can't repay you. I can't thank you enough for everything that you've done for me. Completely altruistically, like you're not getting it. I'm never going to get you a job. I'm never going to like help you out in that way. And he said, my only ask is that when you are in a position to help other people, that you will help everyone that you can. That's all I ask you, just to pay it forward. And so I have taken that to heart. And I think that helping others, and even if it's just talking with them or connecting with them or giving them advice, because there were so many people who did that for me that I want to and love to do that for others. So that is a long-winded way of saying, please reach out to me if you're interested in this business, or if you just want to talk, or if you have any parenting advice. I'm all ears.
Oh, this was great. I'm glad we finally
yeah,
did it.
Me yeah, me too. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, no doubt. Ashley Adamson, bringing the advice. It was great. It was awesome stories. That was incredible.
You got to get Gary on here. Gary Adamson will give you.
Oh, yeah. That's going to happen. Off-season, we're going to get that on 100%.
He'd be happy to.
I love it. Well, thank you, Ashley. I think as we always try to end these podcasts with a subtle challenge, and I think a big takeaway from Ashley was that when she walks into a room, she wants to feel as though she's lit up. She's the light and people can be drawn to her. So the challenge is kind of ask yourself how you think people view you when you walk into a room. Are you a light? Are you flashing? Are you blinking? Are you off? What is it? And evaluate it and see if it's where you want to go. So the way we always end this podcast, as you know, we end it with a simple phrase. The only limits that we have in life are the ones we set ourselves. Peace.